Welcome to Maxed Out Man, helping you become the man you were made to be.
Hey guys, it's Kevin Davis from the Maxed Out Man podcast. This is episode number 37. I'm here with Chris Smith, who is an accountability partner, recovery coach, speaker, and health and wellness advocate. And we just learned this morning he is not a hunter, but he loves the mountains. So we'll have to get him up here to give us a visit here in Montana. We were talking about mountains and quiet living and the joys of that. So, hey, Chris, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it. Appreciate you taking the time this morning. I know you said you had a busy day so far already.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, Kevin. I enjoy what you do. So I appreciate what you do. And I believe we're like-minded in quite a few ways. So when you ask me, hop on here. Absolutely. I don't care how busy I am. So anybody that's kind of on the same scale as what I do and how I think, man, I'm going to fully support it. So I appreciate you.
That's awesome. Hey, so Chris, give me a little bit of your background, kind of what you do. I know you've got some varied background, kind of varied in what you do, and walk through that with us so people can kind of get an idea of who it is we're talking to, and then we'll just jump into whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, currently I'm a program director for a 24th Judicial District in our area, located in Tennessee. And it's a program, I build a program for individuals to have an alternative pathway besides incarceration. So high risk, high need individuals that need to change their life. So I'm building a program from the ground up. Before that, I worked with the Tennessee Department of Mental Health, Substance Abuse Services as a peer project coordinator. And I overseen 10 counties to create recovery capital for those communities and those counties. And we would leverage the community as a resource in and of itself, things that they may not believe that are there. And so we build recovery capital because we are seeing addiction on the rise, and we're not just seeing it as this dirty little secret anymore. It's in every crevice, crook, and nanny in our communities. It's affecting every sector of our society, and it is not partial to any particular population of people. And so we're starting to see the growth of addiction, and we're also seeing the great need and necessity for having more recovery support in our communities, and us reducing stigma to start having these open conversations about it. And I'm passionate. I'm just so passionate about this, Kevin, because I myself am an individual in long-term recovery from a 22-year meth addiction and a 25-year opiate addiction, man. So, so I've been through the ringer. I have been through the ringer, and I literally fought for my life to come out of that. And I know it can happen. And so I'm passionate. So when I look at people today, I see me. And so I see hope, and I won't give up on them as many times as it takes. It does not matter. I'm not going to give up. And so I want to be able to be a voice for individuals, and them stand on my shoulders, and whoever comes behind them to stand on theirs. I'll accept the challenge of building this, taking on this difficulty, because it's difficult. And there's a lot of stigma with this. So, so I still do that. I also work with a few other addiction networks and organizations part-time, and I travel around. I travel around and speak about my story, about how we could have collective impact in our communities, to organizations, to rehabs, to prisons, to churches, to universities, because we're seeing a mental health breakout on our college campuses, and addiction breakout on our university campuses. So we do collegiate recovery as well. And I go into the schools and I talk to the kids because they're getting younger and younger. It's affecting them as well. So I speak a little bit of everywhere about recovery or addiction, recovery, mental health. That's what I'm passionate about. So that's where I'm at right now.
That's awesome that you're able to come out of that after all that and use your experience, use your knowledge, and use your story. It's a weird dichotomy, I think, when you're talking about recovering addicts being then the support, because like you said, you got to overcome the stigma, mm-hmm. but then it's like, I'm an expert because I did all these things, right? Like that makes me an expert.
Yeah. Real quick, Kevin. So when I interviewed for the state position, and mind you, I'm a what they call a range 2 offender. I've been to prison a couple times, been locked up all over the place and been in countless trouble. Very checkered past. And anyways, I was speaking at a university to the community there, and there was an individual that came up and gave me his card. He was like, that was fantastic, brother. Please give me a call. Come to find out, we developed a friendship. Come to find out that he worked with the Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services as a Lifeline Peer Project Coordinator. And his position came open. He took a promotion and he got with the director. The director asked him, do you have anybody in mind? And he said, I got one person in mind. So I interviewed for the job, and you have to have, there is some criteria, educational criteria. And I was going through college at this time, but I didn't have any degrees or anything. And so they asked me about my educational background. And I told them, Kevin, I was like, I got a master's. And they were like, really? They was like, that's great. What do you got a master's in? I said, life, baby. That's exactly what I said in the interview. I said, life, baby. I got a master. There's nothing that a book can tell me that I have not experienced. I told him, I said, I believe that lived experience is the greatest experience because it's hands on, you know. And so I've been in the trenches, been on the front lines, and I'll read these books, but I can just walk you through the history of my life and understand it better than I can reading some words on a book, you know. So, but I got the job.
That's awesome, which may have taken a little finagling when you're talking about state government, I'm sure, for them to check those boxes off.
that's exactly right. So we busted a ceiling. A ceiling, you know what I mean? And that's breaking some stigma. My past is not going to affect my present for my future, you know. And so, man, it's not that they looked the other way. They just looked at who was in front of them and said, we're going to give him a shot.
Man. Yeah, which is awesome. My brother spent some time in prison, but I've got a really good friend of mine that spent 10 years in prison. Now he actually has been on the podcast, but you know, and so being able to, he ended up having to do like his own businesses, and he helps other ex-cons do their business because it's hard. Like it's hard to get a job, you know, and I don't know if you call it the University of DOC, Department of Corrections or what, but yeah, it's that the stigma of being an ex-convict and trying to, you know, prove that you aren't a, you know, lifer and that you have learned something, you want to better yourself is probably a big, you know, big challenge.
Oh, bro, look. So, of course, right when I started changing my life and stuff, right, I went to a treatment center and then went through their phases. They phase out to where you're like in a halfway house, transitional living and whatnot. And so at that point, I was able to work. And so I had to go look for a job. I didn't have a license. I didn't have anything. So I'm walking miles a day, just doing whatever's necessary. It did not matter to me. I was willing to do whatever it took to keep making progress. So I would walk miles a day. And I just started out in the simplest of places, fast food restaurants, all these, you know, just whatever. And I kept getting rejected, kept getting rejected. I remember going to this particular place that cooks chicken, fried chicken, and they called me back in for an interview. And I was like, man, you put me in front of somebody for an interview, I've got it. It doesn't matter. Yep. I've got it. That's just who I am. And so I'm sitting there and I'm talking with them, and they pull out like this paperwork that's this thick where they done a background check on me. And so they're looking at it, and they were like, so your past, tell us about that. And I'm like, well, you know, it's pretty checkered, as you can see right here, you know. And they were like, well, it was recent. There was some recent stuff in there too. And at the end, I knew I was not going to get the job. And I told them, though, I said, guys, I said, I'm just here to fry chicken.
Yeah. We're not working with nuclear reactors here. Man, we're frying chicken, right?
Fried chicken. And I will be the best chicken fryer you guys have ever had, ever. And they were like, after I gave my pitch and everything, they were like, you know, well, we'll be getting in touch with you. And I'm thinking, no, you won't. Yeah. And so I realized right then, because I had been rejected five places, and I was a little discouraged. I was, but I kept putting these apps in and applications in, and I got a phone call, and I said, look, I'll meet you today. I knew right then, I said, okay, this is what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to present my past with no shame, no guilt, mm-hmm. and stand on it, and let them see where I was to where I'm at least at right now and where I want to go. And I want them to look at me and hear my heart. And so that's what I did on my next interview. And it was an $8 an hour, $8.50, something like that, 2.5 miles from my where I was living. And I just said, I told him, I said, I will be the best pizza maker. It was at a pizza. I said, I will be the best teammate that you have. I'll be the best pizza. And she gave me a job. She told me that her father was in recovery. And so it resonated. She was crying and stuff. Six months. They gave me that store. I became store manager, and I took that store from 17. There was 24 in that region, regional area. And we were 17 out of 24. And in 3 months, I took us to 3, and to a point to where they wanted me to speak to all the managers at a managerial conference we had in Nashville once a month about teamwork, attitude, and discipline. And that's what I did. You know, that's what I did. And I still didn't have a license. I was running to work, 2.5 miles to work, 2.5 miles home. And I ran. I said, this is a good opportunity to get something else in. How can I fit this in and allow this to better my life? So I said, I'm going to run to work, you know, and I'm going to run home. So,
get your fitness, burn off some of that free pizza you had for lunch, right? That's
you better believe it, Kevin. You better believe it, man. Yeah.
So what's the, so because I don't think a lot of people really understand how the emotional and the psychological, and we're not here to talk about prison, but I'm just interested in what you see as the, because I'm sure you've got people, you know, and you deal with addicts and you deal with ex-cons and all that. What's the difference between your approach versus the approach where someone just gives up and is like, I'll just go back in because that was a quote unquote better life for me than all that I'm having to go for here?
Oh, it's a great question because I've done it several times. It's a whole nother world. It's a whole nother world. And so when we have to come out and we have to try to acclimate back into society and what societal norms are after we have been through the ringer and the way that we have moved, because people don't go to prison for short sentences. You're not in there a year. You're not in there 2 years. You're in there, you know, at 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years. And so the way we move is very different. And then society expects us to transition without giving us any time or any effective resources to really accommodate to a different lifestyle and gives up on us. And so if we don't have any, if we don't really have any anybody or our community walking alongside us, then we've already lost. We've all, that was the scary part for me, Kevin, because I had just gotten out of prison on a 16-year sentence. And, you know, 2 weeks, I'm right back into doing the same thing that got me there, that landed me there. And I and so I moved off. I went to that treatment center. It was hours away. And when it finally clicked, like, boom, like this may be it for me, I went all in. You know, our Fit for Recovery motto is go all in to get it all out, every bit of it, 100%. And so when I made that switch at 100%, I went all the way in to learn about who I was and just keep my blinders on, understanding that not everybody is going to come alongside you or believe in you, and you just need to believe in yourself and keep your head down. What I did not know, what I did not know was for me, that God was going to call me back to my community. I did not want to go back there because I was afraid, Kevin. I was afraid. I didn't believe I was going to get a fair shake there. I hated that place. Those people hated me. My pain was there. My hurt was there. My anger was there. All that stuff was there. And I left that environment. And what I found was a decent living, an honest living, a happy life here. How are you calling me back to a place of so much pain and so much hurt and anger where the community is not receptive to me? And I don't care if they are, because I don't ever want to go back. Right. And so, the response was from God was, you have to face this in order to move on. And there's a lot of people that need to see you and see your change, that it may inspire and instill hope in them. And we're going to use you, as difficult as it may be. So after fighting with that for about a month, I went back home. I went back home, and the mental, just the mental challenge of that, like when I got home and I was like, oh, and I live in a small town, very, very conservative, very traditional, you know, and which is cool. It's cool, you know, but not much changes there except for gas prices here and there. That's about it. You
know? Right.
So, and everybody knows everybody's business. And once everybody has a perception of you, it sticks, you know, so those impressions stick. And I knew, and so I was preparing myself for all that, all that. And so when I got back home, I said, okay, what do I do? And the response was the same thing that you've been doing. And you go speak, you go ask, ask if you can go back into the jail. Ask if you can go speak at churches. Ask if you can go speak into the community. Volunteer, participate. Let the people see your change. Let them see your change. And whether they believe it or not is irrelevant. You're showing up. You're showing up. And so that's what I started doing. And here we are. I've been back home since a little over 4 years. Now I've got a little over 6 years clean, but I stayed at that treatment center for two, you know, and I've got a little over 4 years back into my community, and the impact that I've had, not just in my community, it's crazy, not just in my community, but in my region, in the state, and the other places that I'm privileged to go speak at and touch lives. And so I believe that as far as the mental challenge, trying to put those blinders on, understanding that it was going to be tough and I was going to have to suffer some things as well, and people are still going to talk about me. And matter of fact, it wasn't just the people, the community that I expected would talk about me. It was the individuals that I used to run with, too. They thought I was better than them. And I said, no, I'm just better than what I used to do. That's why I'm coming back in here to speak to you guys. That's why I go to the treatment centers. That's why I speak at the church. And here's the whole thing, though. What's beautiful about individuals that get in trouble publicly, criminally, whatever. All our stuff is exposed, right? Mm-hmm. Our addictions, our secrets. I mean, everything is exposed for the public and it's on display. And so when we change our life and then we openly share about that and everybody's already familiar about us, there's nothing left you can point at. You may not like it. You may not believe in it, but you got to respect it because what you see is a change in front of you. And what I see today is a lot of people that may not have substance use issues that are suffering. I see a lot of people wearing masks. I see a lot of people suffering on the inside. And that's the difference because they're not publicly shamed about it or they're not, and so haven't been publicly exposed. So they try to continue to bury it, mask it, and go on about their day like everything's fine and it's not. But we, the individuals that have had their stuff exposed, share it openly and walk in freedom today. That's the difference. So it was by circumstance, not virtue, but circumstance that made us change our life. And when we change our life and we walk freely now, you can't help but see it. Mm-hmm. You can't help but see the change, radical transformation, you know, and that's helped me so much so like when I'm having an inconsistent day, or, you know, I'm having those thoughts of not being good enough, I can freely share them today. When I make a mistake today, I can freely say, hey, I made a mistake. I didn't go use today. I didn't go turn that meth pipe around. You know, I dealt with my problems today and I openly shared, honestly, openly admitted it and was willing to do something different. You know, so it gave me strength. It gave me strength as well. So I tell those guys that have been in to answer your story or answer your question that routine and structure has been given to us in the criminal justice system, whether it's a local jail, whether it's a prison, whether it's a rehab that we go to or whatever. Structure is given to us. Don't just work within that structure. Understand that you are working that structure to learn a principle. And so when you learn the principle that of the structure that's been given to you, then you start practicing that principle in all your affairs so that you yourself become responsible. That's what it is. Don't just work steps because something was given to you. No, you work the steps and the steps are a bridge to learn principles to apply to your life that you can be productive and an asset to your community and responsible for your well-being, responsible for your family, responsible to your employer. So that's what I would tell them. Learn to work toward a principle that will effectively define what you want to do in life, what you're pursuing. That's what I believe. And keep your head down and work at it.
Yeah. It takes a lot of intestinal fortitude, as they say, or guts. And I mean, really that perseverance, because like you're saying, so there's a couple of things that are interesting, I think. First of all, the people that are judging you, and to your point, they've got secrets in their closet too, but they're just not exposed, and they're almost judging other people as a way to deflect a little bit internally. But then as a person, and this is where the stigma comes in, you get it from both sides, right? Like if you you're a drug addict ex-con to a certain level of society, and then you're a you know, better than them, or you're just trying to be, you know, different, and you think you're better than us kind of thing on the other side. So you're kind of just stuck in this no man's land, it seems. And you have to pursue through that.
Yeah. So somebody told me just the other day, because I work a lot within the community with people that are in particular positions of influence today. Which is great. Yeah. And so I am that bridge. I am that bridge. And he told me, because I find myself frustrated in these meetings, these stakeholder meetings today, and I can just see it on their face. And I talked to him the other day, and I was like, man, I just feel like they're being so judgmental towards me just in their facial expressions.
Their demeanor. Said, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And he said, but maybe they're not, and they're just hearing you out, and you're the one being judgmental. Maybe you're the bridge to bring these people together and to create a more conducive community to uplift the community as a whole. He said, maybe you're that guy. And I said, you're right. You're right. So, I mean, I learned a valuable lesson. It's not us versus them. It's not one on one side and one on the other. We have to remove that line. And so, yeah, I took a valuable lesson the other day. Is it going to be tough? Absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be tough. But here's the whole thing, too. You know, I'm a stakeholder in our community, so much so that our mayor asked me to be on our economic planning and development board in the county to grow our county economically. You know, I am a small business owner. I own a couple of businesses and stuff, and I've created economic impact in our community, and I've shown that we can still be business owners. We can be college graduates. Entrepreneur, doesn't matter. And so I think they see me, and although hesitant, hopefully see me and those other people that we try to help, and maybe, just maybe, they have some issues that they're going to expose so they can become better too. So, it's a difficult task, Kevin, but one I'm up for, man, and look to expand. So
you said you're currently, you know, you're working for the state of Tennessee, right? So, and you're creating, what are these programs? Give us kind of the basic framework of some of these programs and go into as much detail as you want. This is something I don't have a lot of exposure to. My mom had some major drug and alcohol problems. And so I kind of have exposure that way. But as far as like understanding this road to recovery and, you know, that whole thing, I don't really have a lot of experience with.
Absolutely. It's what it is right here. Fit for recovery. Fit. So what we're going to do with individuals and we remove substance use disorder, even though that it will be a focal point as well. But we want to fight addictions of any type of disorder, any type of addiction. Right. Because when I quit using substances such as meth and opiates, I was still miserable. I was still miserable when I was in that rehab. And like I said, when that switch went off, I didn't understand because I just wanted off of drugs and alcohol. And I thought my life was going to be fantastic. What I didn't realize over the course of those 3 months, 2.5 months, that I was still eating myself to death. I had gained 60 pounds. I was out of shape. I was out of shape. I wasn't sleeping well. I did not have energy. And all I did was replace one disorder with another one. I had an eating disorder. I was an emotional eater. You know, I still had my phone. I was still watching porn here and there. You know, I still wanted to slide out and hook up with the woman and disobey orders and rules and stuff. And so,
hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you're enjoying it and learning a lot. If you're looking for extra help, don't forget that I do offer one-on-one coaching. We can talk through a ton of different issues. I can give you guides, guidelines, and logistical help to help you take that next step or go to that next level in some of the things that you're dealing with in your life. We also have some course content, some guides, and a lot of educational materials over at maxedoutman.com. For the coaching, go ahead and go to maxedoutman.com/coaching. And you can learn about that. And then just go to maxedoutman.com for everything else. Thanks for joining us. Now back to the episode.
What I found was that it's not the substance or the thing that we use to cope. Those are all just byproducts. It's just that our life is unhealthy because we make unhealthy decisions. So we become unfit and irresponsible, and we use something to find a way out. So when I was looking at my life and I said, man, where am I fit at in my life? And I wrote them all down, boom, boom, everything I could think of, right? And I looked at them. I looked at my life and I said, or those life areas, and I said, man, I am unfit everywhere, everywhere. And so I kept those life areas and I said, what can I do today? What can I do right now to start becoming fit, making a change right now? And the only thing that I could think of, Kevin, was get up and run. I have ran. Look, Kevin, I have, this came to me. I bet I'm good at running because I've ran from everything my whole life. You know what I mean?
I like that. Yeah,
I have ran. I got to be good at running. So here I am, just overweight, dumpy, feeling like crap. I got up and I took out running and I ran a quarter mile. I ran a quarter mile and my shins and my side was hurting. My shin started to hurt. I couldn't run properly. It's like I can't catch my breath. Like I'm fixing to fall. A quarter mile, Kevin, a quarter mile. And I went back into my room, bro. And I was hurting. And that next morning when I got up, I was in pain. My Achilles, look, my ankles, I could barely move my foot. Like it's how bad it hurt my Achilles in the back. I said, what is that? You know, and so my shins were sore, but you know what I did, bro? I got up and I ran again that next morning. I got up at 5:30 that morning and I ran, because what I understood at that point was that in order to grow, I was going to have to go through some pain. I was going to have to experience it in the moment, and that's okay. I was going to push through it. I was going to run through that pain, and I was going to run through that pain again. And so pain, just like a woman giving birth, that she has those pains before she births something. And I knew that I was going to be birthing something as I ran through that pain, man. I knew it. And so I ran every freaking day. And 3 months later, I'm at 5 miles a day. And what happened during that change was I started eating better. At that time, I smoked cigarettes too. I quit smoking. I was sleeping better. I was mentally charged in the morning. I woke up grateful. I had the energy to start working on other goals in my life. I started moving into my life to where I became fit physically, to where I was fit spiritually, and I was fit emotionally, and I was fit mentally. So the fit, all that required for me was frequency, F, intentionality, I, time. And so when I talk about setting goals, I was setting goals inwardly to be established foundationally before I started working on external goals. So I had to have those four internally founded, that if a result didn't happen for me on the external goals, that I would still be sound and not moved away from continuing to pursue my purpose. That's what it was. Frequency, the rate or amount at which something should occur. Intentionality, to be fully aware that something that you're doing. Time, scheduling, planning, and arranging when that something should be done. So I started goal setting, you know, and then into the four that I just explained. And recovery, when I talk about recovery, I use a working definition of recovery. And that working definition means it's active, it's always alive and active, and it's moving forward. And it's a process of change through which individuals improve their health and wellness, live self-directed lives, and strive to reach their full potential. So when we talk about striving, that is vigorous effort. That means I need 100% of me. Now that 100% today could look different than the 100% yesterday, but I still need you to show up with every bit of you, even if you're not feeling like it. You know, you get up and you keep moving and you give it your all so you can get everything out of the freaking day that you're supposed to be getting. That's what it is. So who does that definition sound like it's for? It's for everybody. And so we take this program right here with principles. We work steps, like I was telling you earlier, and the steps are a bridge into principles. Honesty, hope, surrender, courage, integrity, willingness, love, responsibility, awareness, discipline, and service. That's what we do. If we start living by those principles and practicing those principles in all our affairs, we can't do nothing but go up. Not go up in society's definition of what going up is and scaling. No, we go up inwardly. That's where we want to thrive at. That's where we want to be at, you know, and so that's what we want to, that's what we want the world to see us as, that they may be inspired to do something different. So we're going to take this program here, right here, and we're going to present it into the recovery courts. And so I'm excited about that. That looks like movement. So We do classes, group therapies, but the catalyst is the movement, is the exercise. Because what happens is when you exercise, you become more socially involved. You're generating new brain cells. It improves your mood and it alleviates depression, eradicates depression. No more. I was diagnosed with social anxiety disorder. I had depression. And I was diagnosed with it. I don't take medicine today. I don't take medicine for anything, for nothing. Yeah. So anyways, so we do the exercise, you know, and then we do group sessions or group therapy on sensitive and vulnerable topics, on places that we need to improve in those life areas. And we discuss them and then we start setting goals, and we are all each our accountability partners. So what we're doing is we're creating support and relationships among the groups.
Man, honestly, it's super inspiring just to hear that. Cause obviously for someone like me, I've been on, you know, my degree's in exercise physiology. I've been an avid exerciser for 35 years. And, but still all of those things that you describe are, you know, the quintessential part of exercise, but then transferring that into these mental and spiritual and goal setting and all of those things is super important. And that's super inspiring. Just, you know, we're training for a little 10K now. We've done a couple of marathons, a bunch of half marathons. So I owe my wife 2 miles this morning after this podcast. So I'm going to change back into my workout shorts and go do that. So I'll be inspired thinking about you running back and forth to the pizza restaurant. I'm curious if, you know, given, so I, for some reason I got addicted to watching these body cam shows, which is basically like a variation of the cop show, which honestly, what I found on those shows, that's really interesting. And obviously they're picking these stories, but the cop's compassion and willingness to help and those kind of things. But I do know in watching, you know, other TVs, talking to people, that the court system by and large is not necessarily friendly to the actual rehabilitation part of it. You know, they talk about the prison industrial complex and you know, all of this stuff, minimum sentencing, and I don't want to get in necessarily the total politics of it all, because it's just so convoluted. But are you facing an uphill battle in trying to get the courts and probably individual judges to kind of accept this and move forward with you?
No. So the judge got appointed by our governor of this great state, and the judge used to be my defense attorney. He used to be my defense attorney. So he heard that I was doing well, and his wife is the circuit court clerk. I would go up there and I would visit them because I was involved with the state. And so there were things that I needed from the courthouse to help other individuals. And his wife told him, you ought to see this guy. Now I used to run with, I wasn't affiliated, but I did run quite a bit with some bikers. Well, my hair was down like real long. Like I look totally different, bro. Totally different. But And I was a drug, I was in drug distribution. I was a drug distributor for parts of four states. We were a little bit of everywhere. I was somebody they were dying to get off the map and put away for a long time. And I was okay with that. I was not expecting change. Nobody else was either. And so they just wanted to do away with me. Anyways, I changed my life. He heard about it. He wanted to meet me. And when we met, he was in awe. He was inspired. And so at that point began conversations about Recovery Corps. I was working another position. Well, anyways, he talked to me about it. And I said, look, I'll help any way that I can, buddy. You know, and so he said, when I look at people today from up there on that podium, stand there, he said, I see you and I want to be, I want to help change some things around. I said, okay. So anyways, months went by, a year went by, and then he calls me, we have a meeting and he offers me this job. And, because we got the funding, we also have some other funds within the county, five counties. And, so we were going to go after it. And I told him, I'd think about it. I told him, listen, I had a great job. I make my own schedule. Well, I still make my own schedule today, but, I told him I would think about it. I knew it was a lot to take on and that we were building it from scratch. And, anyways, 2 weeks, you know, he texted me a couple times. Have you thought about it? You thought about it. He really wanted me to take that position. And so I said, well, let's have a meeting. And I told him, I said, brother, I said, there's two reasons that I'm going to take this job. And he was like, yeah. And I said, yeah. I said, because I want to make impactful change in our communities here locally. And then extend, but here locally, this is my hometown. And also I said, I love our story, mine and your story. And he said, it's a good one, isn't it? I said, yes, it is. Yeah. And so I took the job. We went around to those five counties, requested monies for them to support this. And we got it. We got it. We've got a multiple six figures to start working with. We're going to build recovery capital as well. As far as transitional housing, with this recovery court, we have behavioral health therapists on. We have the full support of these five counties within our district. And now with that, there are some, there is some people that are hesitant. There is. They don't see how this is going to work.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode. I hope you're enjoying it and learning a lot. If you're looking for extra help, don't forget that I do offer one-on-one coaching. We can talk through a ton of different issues. I can give you guides, guidelines, and logistical help to help you take that next step or go to that next level in some of the things that you're dealing with in your life. We also have some course content, some guides, and a lot of educational materials over at maxedoutman.com. For the coaching, go ahead and go to maxedoutman.com/coaching, and you can learn about that. And then just go to maxedoutman.com for everything else. Thanks for joining us. Now back to the episode.
And I told him, I said, look, I've had people bet against me my whole life. I've been challenged my whole life, and I understand your skepticism. I said, but here's the thing. And maybe I need to learn how to talk a little, articulate a little bit better, and tone down some of my, because I can be assertive and aggressive. And I said, but I told them during this meeting just a couple of days ago, I don't care if anybody inside or outside believes in this program. I said, I've been challenged my whole life, and this is another challenge that I'll gladly accept. So you can still be skeptical. I don't care. I don't care. You know, and we're going to build a beautiful thing here. So, yeah, so it's not going to have, you know, when a plane takes off, it's going to be shaky. It's going to have turbulence, you know, and then as they elevate and we gravitate, the pressure becomes more, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I like that pressure. I like that pressure, and I expect that pressure, and I expect turbulence, and I expect it to be shaky. I expect the takeoff to be. That's fine. But then we'll get to a place where we level out and we can sustain this thing. And it's going to be a model for a lot more different places. It will be.
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking. It's cool to create this from scratch, because then it can be a model. And I think one thing that seems to be helping now is that more people are talking about the opioid epidemic, you know, as a topic. There's a bunch of documentaries out there on Hulu and Netflix and, you know, and those kind of things. So I think people have more of a understanding that this is a real problem that's not just affecting junkies, as they used to be called, right? Like, they're not, it's not just that junkie, you know, stuck in some alley somewhere or some, you know, skid row or whatever. It's the, you know, Utah, in the Salt Lake City area, you've got upper middle class, you know, white ladies that have major opioid addictions. And it's, you know, and I think that speaks to, and what you're doing, I think, is super important, because you're helping to change the stigma. You're helping to show that there's another path other than just let's lock them up for 15, 20, 25 years or life, you know, versus let's come up with a different path. Because if you take all of those, especially these younger kids, right? If you take those kids out of our society, and yeah, there are some that are just, they choose paths to this is going to be their life. But there are a subset of those that can be major contributors to our society as a whole. And I think that you're a great example of that.
I appreciate that, Kevin. Here's what I want to tell the community, and I'll do it. Like, when we hold community forums, I ask people, Kevin, I tell them, it's real simple. I tell people, raise your hand if you've ever been on a diet. Raise your hand. Everybody in there raises their hand. And I said, keep your hand up if you've been on two. More than two, keep your hand up. Been on so many that you can't even count. You don't even know. You know how many people have their hands up? About 90%.
Pretty much everybody.
About 90% of the room. And I'm talking 500-600 people in the room. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what it is? I said, it's discipline. And I said, sometimes we need people to come alongside us to help us with a routine and a structure in life where it fits our life so well that we can become disciplined. And I said, just like this right here, where you struggle with your weight or you struggle with eating healthy or a lifestyle change, so are they. So are they. So they need somebody to walk alongside them, give them something. And I'm not saying that they have to take everything or we have to take everything from a diet. We can take the meat and leave the bones. Take what works for you and then leave the rest. Pluck here, pluck there, whatever. So it fits within your lifestyle and you're able to manage it. So you are productive. So you are an asset to the community. You know, so you can remain disciplined and responsible. And that's the same thing. It's the same thing with somebody coming alongside somebody that's struggling with their weight or with their health. Discipline. It comes down to discipline as being a principle that needs to be in the forefront of our life. That's what it is. You know, most people don't have it, Kevin. Most people don't have discipline. But then they measure the trouble that their life is in based on what's being exposed or criminalities, like the severity of it, when internally we still have people dying. Everybody's reactive. I don't want to go to the doctor or the hospital, get a checkup and say, hey, you know, if you don't do something now, you're going to be dead in 4 weeks. Your blood pressure's so high. You had, you know, your cholesterol, like all this. No. I want to be disciplined now. So when I go to the doctor, they're like, man, Chris, you're in tip top. What are you doing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so
me too. That's a big one. Yeah. That's definitely, and you want to be, like you said, you got to be mentally healthy, physically healthy, spiritually healthy, you know, communally healthy and all that, you know, the exercise part of it. I think our society has sees exercise as this punishment for yourself, almost like, oh, well, I eat too much, so I got to exercise, or I eat too much, I got to go on keto, or, you know, whatever those things are. But it's more of a punishment than a reward. You know, you're really rewarding your body, right?
So I tell people all the time, we need to re-meet with what, so we need to redevelop the relationship and how we perceive the relationship with exercise. Sometimes when we were in school, like if we got in trouble, they would make us run laps. You know what I mean? Or they would make us do, it was like a punishment. So when we think of exercise, we go back. If that was what happened to you in school, that's what you think, you know? And so it's a punishment. It's not a punishment. It's a privilege to be able to get up and move and be healthy. It's an honor to be able to go for a walk. You should be grateful that you can do some functional fitness moves that are going to be utilized in your life. You know, and it doesn't mean we have to go in and bang out an hour and a half sesh, you know, even though I will. I mean, because that's just where I'm at, you know, like I am. Yeah. So, but you can, all you have to do is get up, go walk for 15 minutes a day in the morning and build on that. Build on that. Don't despise the day of small beginnings. So what you do, you start small, and then when you're able to manage that, you measure yourself more. If this is a lifestyle change, that means we're going to do it for the rest of our life. So quit putting a 90-day, 120-day, don't wait till January 1st with this new resolution that you've got this great resolve within yourself. You can start today, go out, give yourself 5 minutes to walk, and if you feel good, walk another five. Like, that's it. That's it, because this is for the rest of your life, and it's going to improve your life and the capacity with which you live it. You know, here's the thing, Kevin. 90% of our country, 90% of our country is metabolically unhealthy. Metabolically unhealthy. That blows my mind. That blows my mind. Like,
well, I talk about a national security issue, right?
That's a huge, you know why? Because we're sedentary. Because we live sedentary lifestyles, which elevates mental health disorders, right? You find people depressed, and people become so sedentary that they're like this, you know, they can't move without it. Throw this thing out in the yard. Throw that thing out in the yard. So get rid of this. Get rid of this at certain times, right? And work on you. Put away all the distractions and work on you, even if that's 15 minutes a day. You know, and then you do that 3 days a week.
I love
watch
it.
Watch your life improves. Improve.
Yeah, 100%. Hey, so if I'm just a, you know, I'm a, just a regular guy, what can I do practically? You know, we're not, I'm not in Tennessee. So what can we do practically to even affect change on a on an individual level? In our own communities, in our own life, within our own circle? I mean, honestly, I'm not a guy that really encounters, you know, recovery stuff on a daily basis. So what kind of thing can your average person do to kind of contribute to just the ideology that you're trying to, get through in terms of helping those in similar situations as you were in?
So service work, right? Service work has been the greatest benefitor in my life. Giving of myself, you know, selfless acts. And what I did when I got into my community, we are a small rural area, right? But there's no excuse. So what I did was I said, where can I volunteer my time at with something that may I may be passionate about, right? And I just looked up them. I looked up those places and I got with that, those organizations, small grassroots organizations, and said, hey, wherever I can help, you let me know. Because here's the thing. I'm going to tell you that this is the difference between being intentional and being in, or having intentions and being intentional, intentionality. If there is a woman in your community that is down in her back, she's a single mother of three kids, and she's off of work. And you know her. It's a small community, and you know her. And you shoot her a message over social media, or you shoot her a text message or whatever, and say, "Hey, I heard you were down in your back. I'm, you know, thinking about you and praying that you get a speedy recovery." You know, that's cool. That's good intentions. But intentionality is hearing about that same woman, baking a casserole, putting your apron on, or coming over with a broom and saying, "Hey, I heard you were down in your back, you know, and I know you got three kids. Here's a casserole. Do you need anything else? Do I need to clean your house for you? Do I need to?" So I would say, to meet people where they are, you have to literally go to where they're at. You have to do the footwork. It's going to take time. You're going to have to sacrifice time. It's going to take a little more energy and a little more effort. That's what that looks like. I don't know what it specifically looks like in each individual community, but I know throughout this great country of ours that there are organizations all over this place that we can tap into and be a part of to at least initiate some change. And I promise you, it's going to take something from you. I always say that helping people should always cost us. It should never cost them. Never cost them. And so we put time and effort and intentionality into helping those individuals in those organizations that touch our heart. And those organizations are throughout all our community. That's it. And get involved. Get involved. Not just from a distance, in person. There's something about the energy, about being in person with somebody that you're helping, that's going to plant a seed. Don't know when it's going to grow. But the seed is planted. And what's going to happen is they're going to remember that, and they're going to do the same thing for somebody else that we did for them. That's the way this thing works.
That's awesome, Chris. I mean, I think this is a great inspiring thing for me to think about, as you know, in pretty much everything that you said. I'm super excited that you were able to come on board. How would people learn more about what you got going on, even if they're thinking about trying to implement some of this stuff in their own community? They're trying to get involved, but you know, you using your program and what you're doing as a model, where do people find out more information about that?
Well, right now I'm just on LinkedIn. LinkedIn was my first social media introduction back into social media in 7 years. So I've been on LinkedIn for 11 months now, something like that. I can't remember. But but we are creating a website right now to where we will be doing train the trainers. Okay. So to where individuals can facilitate this back wherever they're at, take this back with them. I do this sometimes as a active workshop with Hazel and Betty Ford Foundation. If anybody's familiar with them, we go throughout the country and I do this. And so sometimes, and but we're about to open this thing up. And by next year, of course, we'll be on YouTube. And by next year, we will have a website. But right now, I'm on LinkedIn and I do accountability work, and we take them through this program here.
Great.
You know, so yeah, just right now, but I'm full. So
full right now. Well, maybe they can reach out and learn a little bit more. I will put a link to your LinkedIn in the show notes, but if you're just listening to this, it's Chris Smith, comma, what are the initials after your name? On your LinkedIn, it's Chris Smith, and because I had to search for it.
Oh yes, CPRS.
Okay, so if you search for Chris Smith, CPRS, you'll find him, because obviously Chris Smith is like Kevin Davis. There's a billion of them. I want to lead people to the right way if they're just listening to this. So Chris, I really appreciate everything you're doing out there. I'm excited to kind of follow along and stay in contact and see how this goes for you. And appreciate you taking the time, buddy.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much, Kevin, man. You have a great day. You guys have a great day out there too, man.
Thank you.
If you're looking to really maximize your life and become the man you were made to be, head over to maxedoutman.com and get your journey started today.